Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Swinging a high drive into center field. Hits at the wall. It is gone! Cassis does it again.
Again.
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
And he swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back! It's gone! Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Frank Lee, it's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Welcome back to Play Tessie. It's episode 62, and if you're listening on Drop Day, it's April 8th. Episode 62, we're getting into the nitty-gritty of these guys. Ruby De La Rosa might be the most interesting name I saw in there. We don't need to talk about who wore the number last year. If you guys remember who wore it last year, bonus points for you. Think it was only one game. That's your hint.
Denelson Lamet.
No, not Denelson.
One game? Worse. I don't know then.
Matt Dermody.
Oh.
Yeah, we can.
What a way to start.
Yeah, good way to start. But this is the official podcast of Dark Chocolate. Because it's bittersweet. It's a bittersweet podcast. I was looking it up. I was like, what tastes bittersweet? And I was it's like dark chocolate.
Good for you. I like that. That was creative. I didn't know where you were going with that, and I totally get it now.
I don't like dark chocolate.
I'm so-so. I prefer, like, milk chocolate. Kind of a wimp.
I like dark more, I think.
Really?
Yeah, I like dark more, yeah.
So last year, I went to this, like, chocolate factory, and it's like, oh, we're going to a chocolate factory. Like, this is going to be great. And, like, they were, like, showing us how the chocolate's made. They were showing us all this shit, and they were giving us tons of free samples, and like every single one of these free samples was like the most bitter chocolate. Like, it was terrible. Like, you would not believe this stuff was chocolate. It was not bittersweet, it was just bitter. And like, I guess like milk chocolate, like the chocolate we all taste, is like, I don't know, it's just way different from like when you first make it in the factory. I don't know. Fun facts about chocolate.
I forget the name, the brand. Someone listening is going to know, but those chocolate bars, they're kind of like fancy, but they're affordable, and they have directions on how to eat them at the back. It's like, break off one or two pieces, put it in your mouth, press to the roof of your mouth as the aroma of bitters unfolds, then chew the chocolate to release the sweet blah, blah, blah. I'll try to find it, but it's like affordable bougie chocolate that I used to get, like, or my mom would get for me when I was younger. And I thought it was so cool. Of like bacon bits in it, or like dried raspberry. Just made me feel high class.
I've never heard of that brand, but like that process you're talking about, like, oh, break off one piece and like push it to the roof of your mouth. And like, that's the type of stuff they were telling us to do at the factory.
Yeah. See, I love that.
Yeah. But this is also the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Before we get going, Sox just finished up a 7-3 road trip, took 2 out of 3 from the Angels. Good stuff in that regard. But before we get going on all the good and the bad from this weekend, hit that subscribe button. We're on Odyssey, on the Odyssey app, Apple, Spotify. Hit that subscribe button, rate us 5 stars, leave a comment, tell us what you think about the Sox hot start so far. They're 7-3. Like, you can't argue with that. It's objectively good. We're also on YouTube, WEI's channel. We've got our own playlist on there. So hit the thumbs up on that video. Leave the same comment there. We love hearing from you guys. We love the engagement. We love hearing from listeners. So also follow us on the socials, at Play Tessie, both Twitter and Instagram. Love hearing from you there too. I'm here with Sammy. I'm here with Pat. Coop's behind the scenes producing. Sox take 2 out of 3 from the Angels, and I guess maybe the move here is to go by this series as we experienced it, because it was like it was a whirlwind of a weekend emotionally, right? Like there was a lot of good and a lot of excitement, and like that, I would say the weekend as a whole kind of reminds me of just what game one was. Because the weekend was a lot of ups, a lot of downs. Like, they win 2 games. Trevor Story goes down, and it's not looking good. And we'll get into that in a little bit, and we'll have a Pat's prognosis for you there. But I guess we just start at game one. The Sox won this game 8-6. First off, what happened with the start time?
It was the stupid opening day ceremony.
But yeah, it was a half hour late. Like,
I know.
That's long. Like, ceremonies, It's like it pushes it back like 3 minutes and Gerrit Cole gets mad. This was like a half hour.
Yeah, I think it was even more. I think it was like 35. Like, that was a lot. That's my only explanation would be what Pat said, is they're doing some ceremony for the tens of fans in attendance in Anaheim to watch the Shohei Ohtani-less Angels get thumped by the Red Sox.
Did you guys see that they booed the Ohtani videos that got played on the Jumbotron there?
That's so fucking freaking. Well, 5 minute mark. I'm good.
Yep, you're
That's
good.
So stupid. Like, that guy gave everything for your disgusting team and franchise.
And your shit owner.
By the way, they're not like playing on the beach or anything, like beautiful. The Angels play off of a highway. I've been to that ballpark. It's in the middle of nowhere. So that guy, it's not like he was living it up in LA while he was there. He was playing for that team that plays off the highway. They don't even know where they're from. And he was unbelievable for them. And he, God forbid, he wants to go somewhere else to a team that's actually run well. And they happen to be your rival, I guess, if you're an Angels fan. But I think that's so stupid. Why? How could you blame the guy?
And it's not like he took less money to leave. The Angels didn't match the offer. Boo the owner. Oh.
It
were $200 million
less. It wasn't even close.
There was a report too where Art Moreno thought there was no way he was getting over $400 million. Like, are you stupid?
What a great team.
Oh yeah, it was weird that they were on a 4-game winning streak before this series, and like, I think coming in we all still thought, yeah, this team is dog shit. But like, it was one of those things where it's like, are you catching them at the wrong time? Like, sometimes, and like, this is a Lou Maloney point that he made a few times before the season, and he made it again. We were talking to him at spring training. He's like, you don't want to play the bad teams early because they don't know that they're bad yet. And this Angels series could have been like a textbook example of playing a bad team before they know that they're bad. But to the Sox credit, they jumped out early. The homers were nuts early. Like, coming into this series, the Red Sox had 4 home runs on the entire season through 7 games. And they hit 3 home runs early with O'Neill, Casas, and Reese McGuire all going deep in the same inning. It was a really good way to jump out to a good start in the series. Like, you don't know what they're going to do against the Angels. Like I said, like, they're on a good streak, but it was good to see those guys get going. You know, especially Casas. We needed to see that first home run get out, and it was a good one for him.
Yeah, I think you said it all. Good signs in that game. There wasn't any singular moment that really stood out for me other than that whole inning where they hit 3 home runs, I guess. But more of a, I don't want to be super negative, Cutter kind of struggled a bit in that game. We spoke about that earlier, Gordo. It looked like he didn't have a feel for the slider, his breaking pitch, whatever you want to classify it as, kept floating up in the zone. I don't know if you guys saw the same thing, but not his best outing.
Yeah, he had those 3 walks in the 5th. Yeah, he didn't finish the 5th. He didn't allow an earned run until that point. But you could kind of see it coming the whole game. It was one of those ones. And we've seen that a few times from Sox pitchers where it kind of looks like they're putting a couple guys on. They're getting out of it. Like, to the Sox pitchers' credit, like, they have pitched really, really well with guys on base, especially with 2 outs. There have not been many 2-out chances that teams have cashed in on against the Red Sox. You guys have any other positive things from early in that game before we get to the inevitable?
I honestly don't. I don't even remember anything other than the negative from that game because it was right. so negative. So let's just
do it.
Talk about it.
So before the big thing happened, it was. I mean, this game was full of fucking chaos all over the place because you had Sadon Rafael get hit on the hand and it looked bad initially, but he stayed in. And after Trevor Story goes down, you had Devers get hit on the hand and it looked bad initially, but he stayed in. But yeah, Trevor Story, Mike Trout hits a line drive ground ball. Story tries to make a dive and falls, hits his shoulder in a ton of pain. Devers' reaction, puts his hand on his head. Duran's taking a knee in the outfield. Story is screaming in pain. It was the next day they came out because that night they only said that he left the game with shoulder pain, which obviously everyone knew was just them just saying nothing because they had to say something. But then the next day they come out, put him on the IL, call up David Hamilton, and they say that it was with a shoulder subluxation. They said it was a dislocation. I'm just going to kick this right to Pat. Pat, you see the word subluxation, and they obviously haven't given us a whole lot, but explain subluxation and for the Pat's prognosis, give us sort of like a best and a worst case scenario here for Trevor Story. And we're talking on Sunday. They might release something on Monday. They might also just let Cora say something in the media on Tuesday. But Pat, from what we know right now, what can you tell us?
Yeah, so subluxation, dislocation, interchangeable, same thing. One's just a medical term, one's, you know, common phrase. I tweeted it out. I'll go worst case first. I tweeted out the video of Christian Gonzalez tearing his labrum against the Cowboys this fall. Very similar. Falling on that kind of arm all the way out, flat, comes up, arm is just completely limp. Which it would look like that if it was just a dislocation, kind of self-reduced when it goes back in. So best case scenario, it's a clean dislocation, self-reduced, labrum's fine, soft tissue's fine. He's in a sling, probably 4 to 6 weeks. Some rehab, say about ramping back up two and a half months.
Okay.
Worst case.
Thrilled with that.
Worst case, which I'm anticipating, is there is damage to the labrum because he doesn't have a history of dislocations. Some people have like general laxity, like they're kind of prone to dislocations, like they dislocate several times.
So you're saying it would actually give you more optimism if he had a history of dislocations in his shoulder?
Yes and no. Yes, because if he's dislocated before, the labrum might be okay. Where this is kind of a one-off from trauma, I would be relatively surprised if the labrum was okay. Because the best way to think of it is your labrum acts like a suction cup. It's a suction cup that keeps your upper arm in your glenoid. You're kind of opening the cup here, bone in here. So it acts as though like a suction cup. So when that becomes dislocated, there's a tensile force or like a forced extraction from the labrum, which can be harmful to the labrum, thus causing tears. I would be pretty surprised if he did not have a labral tear. If that is the case, you're looking at 5-6 months on the shelf.
Yeah, and based off of his reaction in the media, not just that night, but the day after, sort of after he'd had the MRI, and like we don't know if he had the results of that yet, but I think by that point he had an initial diagnosis. Coop, if we have that video of Story's media availability, we could play that. But, oh, I think we have it.
Yeah, just not fun, man. Not fun getting injured or, you know, I'm going to miss games. So, but yeah, you know, it was a kind of a freak thing, but yeah, gonna miss a little time for sure.
Do you, how much did you ask about kind of the range of possibilities for like best case and not best case?
Yeah. I mean, we ask all the questions, still trying to gather all the information and all the opinions from, you know, everybody involved. And, you know, it was a significant injury. And yeah, I think we're kind of waiting to diagnose it before we get all the opinions.
Do you have hope they'll be able to play again this year?
Yeah. Yeah, I always have hope for that. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the key here is he called it a significant injury, and then, and obviously it was super emotional. And then when asked about if there was a chance he would play again this year, like anytime a guy's asked that question, you always have to look at how they respond, not necessarily what they say, but how they respond, because it's either going to be like, yeah, oh no, I'm going to play again. It's just like, I'm going to be out a little while. Like that's, or it's, yeah, I have hope to hopefully play again this year. And it, he's in the camp of hopefully he plays again this year, which in my opinion leads to what Pat was saying before. He tears that labrum, 6 months. That puts you right around the October-ish timeline right there. It's not good.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with three friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app.
Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.
No, that's this feels like the Red Sox are heading into opening day. Like it's like when a fighter wins a fight, but they also tore their ACLs, like both of them in the fight. So like, yay, I won. But also, I'm not going to be training for another 6 months at least. Like, it's so hard to, I don't want to downplay 7-3, especially on the West Coast, which by the way, that counts as double. So they're actually 14-3, if you think about it. But it's just so hard for me to think about anything other than the future of the team without Story. Like we saw it right after he goes down. It was like a cruel joke almost. Just plays right at Reyes at shortstop that Story would have made. They're ruled base hits because everything's a base hit now. But you just saw the effects immediately. And then on like the next day too, it's just over and over and over again. And we'll get to the game two as well, because that one might be even more egregious. But this is one of the worst guys you could lose. This is the captain of your infield defense, which was a huge issue last year, and now it feels like you're right back to square one with that. And I want to ask you guys, can you, like, I don't want to like be too down on these guys, but you got Devers, Valdez, and then a combination of Pablo Reyes, David Hamilton, maybe Romy Gonzalez at short. Kostas has been good at first, but those other guys I mentioned, that might be the worst defensive infield in Major League Baseball. That is awful.
Yeah, I don't have a counter to that. You read those names on paper, it doesn't sound good. You see the way the infield defense has looked since Story has gone down. It hasn't been good. I don't know. Maybe there's some other team that maybe could rival them. I don't know. I'm not going to go through the teams. It's going to be towards the bottom of the league. And obviously Vaughn Grissom is going to come back at some point. He obviously has played shortstop in the past. Like, that's how he came up. But I don't think I've seen anyone really making the argument that he should be going to short. It feels like make sure that he, in the same way that Story didn't play shortstop when Xander was here, it's like, let's get him to know this position, second base. Every rep should be there. Like, I don't think I see anyone saying that Grissom should play short where he wasn't even a very good defender anyway. But yeah, I just, it's a bad infield defense, and we can get into the future of that. But I give Pat a chance to, do you agree with that, Pat, or do you?
Yeah, the reason why Story is so valuable too is that he not only fields shortstop so well, he also makes up for Raffy's lack of range. He also covers them up the middle. What we saw it the other day, like base hits up the middle,
the J-Rod play,
knocking those down, or making a play. Like, he's fielding shortstop plus. Like, he's doing everything he can on that left side of the infield. So when he goes down, you not only have a worse shortstop at the position, Raffy also has no protection. Up the middle is wide open. Like, there, it opens up three holes, really. And it sucks. And I don't think we have a long-term solution, including Grissom, on the roster. There's no one you can plug in and say, I feel pretty comfortable with this guy playing shortstop the rest of the way.
Let me pose the question then, because this has been the discussion on Red Sox Twitter all weekend. And I know we all have our takes on it. Sidon Rafaela has experience as shortstop. He's played there in the minors. He is seen as a good, and depending on who you ask, could be very good defensive shortstop. It's obviously like you give some to get some, but would you move? And I want to kick it to Sammy first, because Sammy and I were having this discussion when we were driving back from radio this weekend. Check that out on the Baseball's Importing feed. We talked to Marcelo Meyer. That was cool. But we were talking about this whole shortstop thing. Speaking of Marcelo, him coming up is not an option. But Rafaela, shortstop. Would you do it, Sammy?
With this roster, I don't think it's ideal, because you just lost your best defender on the infield, Trevor Story. If you move Rafaela out of center, you're now losing your best defensive outfielder, which to me sounds awful. Now, the counter to that would be, well, he's a plus defender at short. And I've kind of heard mixed on that. I've heard he's a good shortstop, which is still impressive. I've also heard he's a great shortstop, which would just be insane considering how good he is at center field to be plus plus at two premium positions. But regardless, if you do that, then now center field is an issue. You could put Jaron Duran there, who was about average in center, but has a history of struggling defensively. You go with Willier Abreu, which I think we all agree is not a great option for center field. Decent corner outfielder, but center field is a little sketchy. And then Tyler O'Neill, a guy who's pretty much only played corner outfield in Major League Baseball throughout his career. Not to mention, the plan long term is for Rafaela to be your center fielder for a long, long time. And I'm talking like at least 5 or 6 years, assuming he sticks. Hopefully more than that. So I kind of just would rather him be in center field, plug the hole at short with Pablo Reyes, and ideally be very open to trade options. Like, there's guys out there you could trade for. There's Nick Ahmed. He's 35, cheap deal, great defender. Can't hit, but that plugs the defense at least. It's Paul DeYoung's on the White Sox, 1 year, $1.75 million. He could be had, I'm sure, for not too much in the way of prospects. So that's my preference, is to keep Sidon in center field, acquire somebody externally to fill in at short, even if it's someone who doesn't hit at all, I feel like you've got enough bats to justify that. So, it's just it's a shitty situation. But I'm not super against Rafael at the short. It's certainly not my first or second option.
Yeah. And Pat, I'm going to ask you the same question, but like, obviously the answer here is probably not going to be an either or thing. Like, yeah, we've seen him play the infield already. He can maybe do, I don't know, but I presented a poll before I kicked to you, Pat. I wanted to give the results of that. So I asked on Twitter what people's solutions would be. It was over 1,100 votes here. So I said the options were, what is your shortstop solution? Is it Reyes, Hamilton, Romy Gonzalez? Is it moving Rafaela to short? Is it a trade? Or is it other? And other got 3%. Reyes, Hamilton, Romy Gonzalez got 15%. A trade got 39%. And Rafael at shortstop was the winner at 43%. So, Pat, I'm going to kick to you here. What would you do?
I would platoon Rafaela into shortstop.
Are you saying like ease him in to shortstop and that with the plan of making him the shortstop going forward, or just play him part-time there?
No, I mean like legitimately split time between short and center. Like, I think you have to see how Reyes is for now. I don't think that's going to last long. And if it gets to that point, you have to give Rafael innings there. You have to. Because we've seen how fucking horrendous the infield defense has been with Reyes so far. If Rafaela can kind of pick up that story role defensively, I'm okay with an average Jared Duran in center field. So I would lean toward, yeah, Rafaela. Maybe between now and when you, if you decide he should be the full-time shortstop, mix him in. Like, half the games play short, half play center. If Reyes, Hamilton, whoever the fuck aren't cutting it, then Rafael is it. Put Jared Duran back in center.
I think you guys both hit it on the head with, because you both alluded to it at least, where you were saying if Rafaela, like Sammy, you said it depends on, like, is he good or is he great? Pat, you said if Rafaela can be what Story was or close to it. That's where I'm at. If he, and we don't know this because we just haven't seen enough of it. In AAA, he was getting there like once a week. Like, we've seen him in spurts there and he's looked good. But that does not mean that he's going to walk into a major league game and be able to play an elite defensive shortstop. And I think a lot of people are assuming that that can happen. And it's way easier said than done. My thoughts
That's
here.
That's a huge assumption.
It is huge. A huge assumption.
It is.
And it's one you shouldn't make. My thoughts here are, if he is that, and obviously the Red Sox have a better idea of that than we do because they've seen more of him. But if he is an elite defensive shortstop, I say do it. You move him there. Because then that allows you to get, like, I would rather have, considering the infield defensive situation, I would rather have an elite defensive shortstop than an elite defensive center fielder. But that said, we don't know that. So if he's just above average at shortstop, because I think we can at least assume that he is at least a little above average at worst.
Yeah.
But that really said,
go ahead. Sorry.
If he is just above average, we've already seen him at the plate, and like, obviously he had a nice day today coming in. He looked really good, but we've seen him at the plate. Right now, he is a below average offensive player. So if he's a below average offensive player and like a slightly above average defensive shortstop, that's not a difference maker. That's basically like a different version of having Pablo Reyes in it short. And now you're sacrificing elite defense in center field to do it. That said, and in addition to that, like, what you would be doing there is you'd be getting Willier Abreu into the lineup. But Abreu, to this point, this year, both spring training and in the regular season games, hasn't shown us that he's any more worthy of playing time than Pablo Reyes. So why are we talking? And like, the main opinion on Twitter, not just from the poll, like, we've seen a lot of people out there with the opinion that Rafaela should just move to shortstop. And Sammy, I think you brought up a good point about the long-term deal here, is that he needs to be the center field option long-term. But
right.
I feel like if Abreu were hitting and showing us that he needed to be in the lineup every single day, and playing Rafael at short allows you to, A, have the best defensive shortstop out there, and B, have your three outfielders who are hitting well out there. If Abreu is hitting well and O'Neill and Duran are hitting well and you want them all out there every day, Rafael at short allows that to happen. But if Abreu's not going to hit, Give me the elite defense in center field. That's where I'm at.
Yeah. Also, Lou made a good point, and you kind of touched on it just now too, Gordo. Red Sox pitching staff is pretty ground ball heavy, which is a good thing. And so you kind of do have to prioritize shortstop over center field if you can. But then it just comes back to what we just discussed. If Rafael is good but not great at shortstop, how much value are you getting out of him? Because he shows flashes. Like today, he had his triple and a single, I believe.
Yep.
Two hits. But like, it's not consistent enough to justify the defense just being good. So it's got to be great. So that's the point where I kind of, it's to the extent of my knowledge, I defer to the Red Sox. If he really, truly is great at shortstop, fine. Plug him in. Duran can handle center field for the time being. But he's got to be plus plus. Otherwise, it's not enough value overall.
Pat, I want to kick back to you. Say, because Sammy and I, it sounds like we're on like pretty much the same exact page here, which is interesting because the majority wouldn't agree with us. Pat, if they put Rafael at short and he shows that he is good but not elite at short, what do you do from there? Do you still platoon like kind of half and half, or do you say, eh, he's good but he's not elite, let's throw him back in center field?
I would lean back towards center field because that is where he ends up long term. But I mean, you have to look at it. You have to see what he looks like at shortstop, especially right now where there is legitimately no answer there. You have to get a look, because if he is plus plus, he is above average, he has to make the move, at least for this year.
Can I throw out some options, external options for shortstop?
Yes. Before you do that, though, Sammy, because I do want to get into that because they're not good. But no. before that, Pat, I kind of like where you're going there. And like, I think an option that they should, probably the option they should do, because you're right, Pat, they should get a look at how he is at shortstop. Like, that's part of his value as a player, is that he can play the infield. And they obviously utilized it during that crazy game in Oakland where Cora pretty much served a freaking steak dinner on a platter. But I like it. Yeah. Yes. Like maybe once a week, play him at short, get all the outfielders in the lineup, see if Willier's bat picks up. Willier should get a little bit more playing time now that Story's out, especially against right-handed pitching. See what Rafael does at short. If he looks like he's that dude, then yeah, you can pick it up. Because like I said, if he's elite at shortstop, and I think, Sammy, you said this too, and Pat, I know you said this, if he's elite at shortstop, he's got to be playing there.
Yeah.
But Sammy, yeah, outside options, let's hear it.
Yeah, but elite at shortstop is such an ask. That is such a massive ask. So
only a few guys are elite.
Yeah. Yeah. Legitimately, like a handful. So excuse me. Here are the external options. First, I want to throw cold water on Willy Adames. I know he's a pending free agent, but that's going to cost a lot because he's very good. And in a year when the Red Sox aren't all in, they're not full throttle, you don't really want to do that. Also, Milwaukee is off to a hot start, so I'm not even sure they're going to sell, though.
Yeah,
it
wait,
is
what's
early.
Their record?
6-2.
Oh yeah, like
so they're off to a, or maybe yeah. maybe 7 now. No, 6-2.
6-2.
So that's unlikely. That's the best case scenario. I think there's a less than 1% chance that happens. Nick Ahmed, already mentioned, he's 35, doesn't hit much, but the defense is sick. He's also from Springfield, which would be cool. So plug that guy in, have him hit 8th or 9th, and hope the rest of the lineup produces, and hope that his defense covers up for the offensive deficiencies. He would not be very expensive. Tim Anderson, we discussed on EEI. Rob falsely said that I was all in on that. I'm not. I don't love that idea, but it's an option. A lot of people like
Tim
Anderson. I'm
in on that just for like the laughs. Like, I don't actually think Tim Anderson would come here and be good in any way, but like, no, I'm in it because it's fun.
He takes stuff very personal, it seems, with the media. And I don't know if you guys know this, but we've got a pretty aggressive media market. Look at the three of us.
Watch
Coop in the back like a lion. All right. Chugging along. This is the one I think makes the most sense. People are not going to like it. None of these options are great, by the way, so don't expect much. Paul DeJong, he's on the White Sox. The White Sox are fucking atrocious. He is their backup, I think, and he's a great defensive shortstop, can also play second base, bats right-handed. The issue is he hasn't hit for like 3 years. He used to be a good bat, like a 20 home run kind of guy, but he hasn't hit for a while. And of course, the automatic response from Red Sox fans, it's not wrong, but it's just so cliche. He'll be at Fenway. It'll help him. So who knows if that's true, but that's the one I like because he'd be super cheap. 1 year left on his deal, $1.75 million. So that's good. Pat, you got something?
Yeah, I got another option.
I wonder if you're thinking exactly where my head is at. Go, I'll tell you if you...
We definitely are. What about Brandon Crawford? He's backing up Mason Wynn in St. Louis.
Oh, that's not where my head is at. I'll give another one.
I don't think St. Louis wants to trade him because he's like the mentor for their young superstar shortstop. He's also another lefty.
I think I'd agree with Sammy there.
That's not a bad one.
It's just not... I wouldn't put that one out. Gordo, who are you thinking?
Okay, this is a little bit outside the box, but part of the reason why I was against the whole Rafael at shortstop thing is just because I don't think Willy Abreu is a guy who is like pounding down the door to be in the lineup. But what if they signed Tommy Pham, platooned him and Willy, and Sedan is the shortstop?
Yeah. Is Pham ready to go?
I have another option. This guy's definitely not ready to go. Adalberto Mondesi.
No, he's made
come
of
on. He's 28. Yesterday,
Coop, popsicle sticks. He's made of popsicle sticks. I don't want that. I don't want another popsicle stick guy. Two more. All right. So this one's kind of out of the box. Oakland has a decent shortstop prospect, kind of under the radar. I keep hearing him pop up on like an honorable mention prospect list. Darrell Hernaez. The issue with him is that he's not quite ready yet. He's going to be better than Pablo Reyes in his career, I would assume. But I don't know if right now he's better than Reyes, and you kind of need him for right now. And when you got Marcelo Meyer in AA, you don't really want to go after a 22-year-old shortstop. But again, it's an option. His defense is average at short. The bat is average. The speed is good. So mixed bag with him. But that's your upside choice. And then here's the second most realistic one, I think. From the Orioles, Jorge Mateo. Excuse me. They have a smorgasbord of shortstops, and they have Jackson Holliday looming in AAA. So I would assume they're willing to trade from a strength. They've also traded with the Red Sox in the past, so I don't think the interdivision trade matters very much to them.
I think it matters a little bit, though. They're 7-3, Sammy. They might matter.
Yeah, it's 7-3, but if you give them, like, I don't know. They love prospects. I don't know what the price. I haven't even begun to think what the price would be. But Mateo's got a good glove and he's got good speed. No power. Doesn't get on base a ton, but when he does, it's dangerous. And again, though, we're here for the glove mostly. So that would be my second most realistic option: DeJong, Mateo, and then I guess Nick Ahmed third. But
I think out of the shortstops you mentioned. I think there's two options that we've discussed that I think are both realistic and something I would do. Paul DeJong and getting the outfielder and pushing Rafael to short option. If it's Tommy Pham or if it's a trade, I don't know. Those are the two.
You could go for a really good defensive center fielder and move Rafaela to, Michael A. Taylor would be perfect.
I know, I was just thinking that.
Yeah.
He'd be perfect right now. We could go over this all day. Yeah. There's options for center field, probably more center field options than shortstop. But man, I just gave you guys like a platter of like old cheese and was like, pick your favorite one. You got to eat one.
You could sign Brandon Belt and teach him to play shortstop. He throws lefty, so it's even worse. Or does he throw? I think he throws lefty, which is
there. It is
bad. You could teach
there
him
short. It is. Brandon Belt. He's Brandon coming Belt. To town. Gonna be great.
Imagine that dude with his build playing short.
The awkward. They call when he was in San Francisco. They called him the awkward giraffe. I think that's great.
He's a shortstop.
The awkward giraffe is your new shortstop. Do the Marlins have anybody that we could just pillage from their outfield? Who do they got? Let's look at the Marlins.
This Brian is really De La Cruz.
Dude, yeah, he could play. You could get Louis Bob, who
Lou Bob's hurt.
He's out for like 4 months now, right? Like
buy low, Red Sox love injured players. They also love AL Central guys. We signed a ton of guys from the AL Central, so let's do that.
Yeah.
There it is. Lubop to the Red Sox. Done deal. Heard it here first.
It's going to be interesting, just to put a bow on this. It's going to be interesting to see what they do. Obviously, you're not going to know anything until they give the official diagnosis on Story. They're going to say on Monday or Tuesday what's going on there. And from there, you can kind of take your best guess as to what they're actually going to do. Because if he's out for the year or close to it, I would hope that the team has shown that they deserve some sort of reinforcements to give them a chance. Obviously, they've done their job to stay more than above water against the bad teams. A 7-3 West Coast trip is not just treading water. Like, that is good. So they've done their part. So if he's going to be out for a super extended period of time, they deserve the reinforcement. Before we move on to the rest of game one, God, we still have two games to go to after that. But before we get to the rest of that, just question for you guys. We can make this part quick. Is Trevor Story officially injury prone? Pat?
No.
Why no?
I think a guy like Lou Bob is injury prone. It's a him and Eloy. Pulled hammy, rolled ankle, like bullshit small injuries, and they miss a ton of time. Trevor has had very legitimate injuries that are not in the same realm of body part. He had his non-throwing shoulder, his throwing elbow, and then his lead hand on hit by pitch. It's not like he's running out there recklessly and he's pulling shit, or he's not falling off of bikes. He is like diving. He's taking an inside pitch that he can't react to. He has prolonged trauma to his elbow. Like, it's very legitimate freak things. It's not these minor things that keep happening over and over and over, which to me means injury prone.
Sammy, where are you at?
Agree.
All right, I'm going to take the other side. I think I'm willing to say that Trevor's Story is injury prone. I'm not going to hold the stupid hit by pitch on the hand. I don't hold that against him. Like, guys, that happens to guys all the time. But the throwing elbow, it's ligaments, and now the shoulder, it's tissue, and it's like he's landing on it. He lands on a dive. Like, how many times do we see guys dive and they're fine, and Story dives, and now it's like, oh my God, now it's his shoulder just gets ripped off of his torso. He's in his 30s. He did not get hurt at all in Colorado, pretty much. I don't know. He's missed way too much time in his time in Boston for me to just kind of look the other way and say that he's not. Like, this
Gordo,
is a stall freak.
Is it the amount of injuries he's had, or is it the amount of time he's missed that makes him injury prone? Because I feel like we didn't really define what injury prone means. Because I'm kind of with Pat. I know I just kind of agree, but I think he said it all. It's not like he's had a lot of injuries in number. They've just been bad ones. We assume with this one that it's bad. I think we all kind of agree on that. But I don't know. Injury prone is so harsh. Like Pat said, I think like Lou Bob is injury prone.
That you're right. That's a different stratosphere. I'm not saying he's on the same level as that. Because you're right. It's not like he's like rounding first base and he's pulling hammies every other day. Like,
so if injury prone is a spectrum, he's on one end and Lou Bob is on the other. I think it's fair to say.
I think he's like, no, on one end would be like, God, who just never gets hurt? I don't know. Lucas Giolito before this year. Marcus Semien is on one end. Yeah. And then Lou Bob is on the other. And Trevor Story is like teetering that. Like, if Marcus Semien is a zero, Lou Bob is 100. Trevor Story is past the 50 marker towards Lou Bob in my mind.
Yeah, that's fair. He's also getting older, like you mentioned. That doesn't help. It's just so, fuck, man. I hate even talking about this.
I know. It's brutal. Let's get to the rest of the game, because that was, well, there's more shit before we get to the good stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what are we going to eat? You know, Winkowski. Oh, well, actually, two errors.
Yeah, well, that's the thing.
He's loaded. Yeah, there you go. There's your missing Trevor Story already. Grand slam.
Winkowski comes in, fly ball to center field. Rafaela drops it. Very next batter, ground ball to Devers. Looks like it either a double play ball or at least they'll get the out at second. He throws to second. Valdez drops the ball. So they're both on. Wink then hits Miguel Sano to load the bases. He gets an out, but then Logan Ohapi the very next batter hits a grand slam, and the Sox were up 4 at the time, so now it's a 5-5 ball game. Story goes down, and then like 2 innings later, that happens. You think the game is kind of cooked at that point.
And then they also took the lead 6-5 and blew that.
Yeah. They like manufactured that run, and it was like great because it happened right after. But then you bring in Chris Martin for the 7th, and he loses his 24-game scoreless streak, which was, I think the record is like 27 or 28 by Koji. Josh Taylor had like 26.
He was sick for a while. Yeah, that's how you beat Chris Martin. You doink a little single, and you get a ground ball that makes it through.
Yeah.
Maybe if you had Story, that streak would still be there.
Yeah, probably. But then after that, good stuff. Tyler O'Neill hits a second homer of the game. Duran goes deep again. So the Red Sox hit 5 home runs in the first game of the series, which was one more than they had in the entire first 7 games of the season. They had 4 homers, and by the end of the game, they had 9. Only other note I have from this game, Duran's hair color. Back to brown. He'd said that
his hair guy
was in California, and when they were stopping through, this is like basically where Duran grew up. It was like 15 minutes from the Angels ballpark. He was like this bleach blonde, whatever. He said, this is terrible. It looks terrible. I got to get it fixed. Everyone was complaining that, you can't. He went 9-for-12 in the A's series, and then he changes his hair color. Like, what are you doing? But he hit that bomb, his first bomb of the year.
Yeah, the first thing I thought when he changed his hair color was, please just get it. Just get one hit tonight so I don't have to hear, he shouldn't have cut his hair. He shouldn't have done that. But he did, to his credit, really good series. We'll cover the rest of it. But yeah, that first home run, right after kind of the discussion around him was, he's getting a lot of hits, but he's not really making hard contact. And Duran goes, yeah, you want to see hard contact? Boom, straight away center field. That was a beauty.
Oh, great piece. Great piece. Blasted it. So yeah. Sox won that game 8-6. You didn't feel that great out. Like, we went into the radio the next day, and it's like the vibes are like confusing. So the vibe check was weird because it's like they won the game. They won it in an interesting way because not too many teams that lose their leader and then let up a game time grand slam would then come back to win that game. But they did, and that was great. But game 2, Red Sox lose this one 2-1. Whitlock didn't get a lot of whiffs, a lot of foul balls. Angels forced him out of the game in the 5th. He only made it 4 1/3. He walked 4. Angels were putting together some at-bats. I don't know whether the credit should go to the Angels for putting together some really good long at-bats or whether this is another discussion on Whitlock potentially not getting enough swing and misses on his stuff. Sammy, where are you at on that? Like, is it the Angels or is it Whit? Like, is it just one outing? I don't know.
I think it's a combination of both. He was locating his pitches, which is a good sign, but the lack of a put away is, it's a little bit glaring, and it's a problem that he's had in the past. I wouldn't look too much into it just because it's so early and he was so great the first time around against arguably a better lineup, you might be able to say. I don't know. They're both not great, but yeah, it's the put away pitch. So maybe he changes something up in the pitch mix. He doesn't really throw high in the zone a lot with his fastball. Maybe that could be the key. Changing levels because he's low in the zone with his breaking stuff, as you should be. Maybe just a mix up, but you know, our boy Andrew Bailey's, he's in the lab right now cooking a new strategy for Whitlock to dominate the whoever he faces next. Probably the Angels again.
Oh,
so he's gonna have to have a whole new pitch mix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that slider, like obviously that's something he's been working on. He's acknowledged it's not like a finished product or anything, that gyro slider, whatever, bolt slider, whatever the hell you want to call it.
Why is it gyro slider again? I heard it explained. It's because of the tightness of it.
I don't know. But I think that hopefully gets to the point where I assume the goal of developing that new version of a slider for him was to have a putaway pitch. Obviously, like he had 8 strikeouts in that first game against Seattle, so we've seen him finish guys off, but in this particular start against the Angels, he didn't. But I think he wasn't as much the story of this game. There's kind of a two-edged story to this game. I don't know which approach you guys want to take with it. They were up 1-0, and then It was Reyes missed the play at short, and then Devers messed up the play that led to two runs, and they lost 2-1 in that regard. So it's either the defense there, or it's that they didn't hit. Reyes batting second, Bobby batting fifth.
Yeah. Oh my God. Bobby batting fifth. Can we never, ever, 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 ever see that again? That is what, like, I get the thought process. He hits lefties better than righties. He is not good at hitting major league pitching. This guy has the longest leash I have ever seen. What has he done to warrant a spot on the roster? It's not unusual to be able to play both corners at an average level at best. It's not a unique profile he has. He has power. He strikes out a lot. Very common. He has a very good arm. There you go. It's a good thing.
I have a better idea. Bobby never bat for the Boston Red Sox again. I think that's the best move to make.
Seriously, dude, you can't keep that guy on the roster. He does nothing. He is a net negative in every way. And I'm sorry, I've never heard a bad thing about the guy as a person. I'm sure he's great. Nothing but good things about him. He cannot be on this team. Call up anybody that has any sort of tool that could help. He is just not cutting it. And he's not even close to cutting it either. What's the stat on his K rate? I'll butcher this, but it's like 50% of his last 80 at bats, something crazy like that. If you're striking out 35% of the time, that's awful. He's at like 50. That's insane. He's got to go, man. I hate ripping on the guy. Again, I'm sure he's great. Cannot be on this team.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a roster building thing. And we talked about it when Devers missed those two games in Seattle, but this team just does not have very much infield depth. And now you're seeing it even more with Story going down. Now you have Bob batting fifth and Reyes batting second. Like, Gio Urshela should have been on this team. He didn't sign for very much. Obviously, like, he's getting more playing time in Detroit than he would have anticipated being able to get in Boston. But there were options out there, and Bobby Dalbec should not have been on the opening day roster. He shouldn't be on the team. I know how this goes. They're going to end up DFAing him, just like they did with Ryan Brazier last year. And it's going to be like this time it'll be the Rays that get their hands on him, and he's going to be really good.
Great.
But the issue is the Red Sox have shown that Bobby Dalbec is not going to succeed for them. So you just have to do it. It was the same thing with Brazier. Like Brazier ended up being great, but I don't think anyone believes that he would have figured that out in Boston. Obviously, he learned a new pitch, so it's like really tangible that he wouldn't have figured it out in Boston. But it's the same thing with Bobby. It's not happening, man. Like, I agree, Sammy. Everyone that has ever talked about him as a person says he's a nice guy. But, I mean, he's out there against lefties, and he's striking out almost every at-bat. It's an automatic out. And when he's batting fifth in front of Casas, it's just not a recipe for success. Was not a surprise to me that they didn't score more than one run in this.
We can all agree, right? I mean, hindsight's 20/20, obviously. We can all agree that in no world would CJ Cron have been worse than Bobby Dalbec has been, correct?
Well, Bobby hasn't gotten on base, right?
Dude, CJ Cron, literally, CJ Cron could only be as bad as Bobby. You cannot possibly be worse. It's literally impossible to be worse because he hasn't gotten a hit. He's 0-for-8. His at-bats aren't even competitive, by the way. It's not like a guy who's like Willier. At least Willier's putting up some good at-bats here and there. He looks bad, but he's putting up good at-bats. Bobby's just striking out against lefties. Righties don't even come up to the plate. It's just sad. I can't justify him being on. Just bring up Romy or something. And also, if you like Bobby, you think he's a good guy, probably better for him to go somewhere else too.
Oh, yeah. It'll be a career, like, spark plug for him. Like, I'm sure he wants it too.
Can you guys recall anybody who's gotten a leash like this? It's been 3 years since Brazier. He's been productive.
Brazier.
Who?
Brazier. It's the same thing.
Yeah, I guess. But Brazier was good in 2021 and, like,
Bobby was good in 2021.
2022. And I don't know. I guess Brazier, but no, but Brazier's gone. This is even longer.
Yeah, I guess you're right. It actually, yeah, Brazier didn't get past last year. Bobby did, but yeah, but Brazier didn't have options.
You want to know something crazy? Pablo Sandoval, who you owed almost $100 million, got a longer leash than Bobby fucking Dalbec. Got a shorter leash.
Yeah, Bobby. Yeah, Bobby got the longer.
What is it, man? What is the obsession? He wasn't even good in AAA. Everyone mentions the home runs. He's striking out 35% of the time against minor league pitching. He
what
can't
confidential hit. Information does Robert Dalbec have on the Red Sox front office? I want to know.
Maybe he's just that nice. And they're like, we can't do it, man. We feel awful.
That's they saw what he did in 20 and 21. That's what it is. They
that
saw
was 3 years ago.
I know. I'm not saying I agree with it. I'm saying that's what they're thinking. And they know it's going to come back out. That's really what it is they know it's going to come back out the second they cut him loose.
Who
but
cares?
He has options. Just put him in AAA. Do it next year.
Dude, I'd be happy for him. It'd be like Chris Sale. I'd be happy for him if he succeeded elsewhere. He can
I
go
agree,
to
but, friggin- but they'll think it reflects poorly on them because they weren't able to unlock it. The Brazier thing, like we used that against Dave Bush all offseason. We talked
it
about that.
His job.
Like that'll be on Pete Fatsy now.
But it's not like the Red Sox have an issue with developing hitters. They churn out bats like crazy. If they mess up one, who cares, dude?
I agree, and I would root for him if they cut him loose.
I still cannot believe they didn't trade him after 2021. You have a vastly, vastly superior prospect right behind him, and you have a surplus. You have a bunch of glaring needs, and they're like, why don't we hang on to both?
Yeah.
Just made no sense.
We were saying, this is not revisionist history. This is not hindsight.
No. This was
screaming,
a thing.
Screaming from the rooftops after 2021. Great season. Cash in now. But I guess it's kind of like CJ Cron, actually, where his profile is not that rare. Guy who plays first base, strikes out a lot, hits home runs. So,
yeah,
whatever.
Only other thing I have from this game that stunk, was Justin Slayton, who
dog
two perfect innings with five strikeouts. Like, this guy's a freaking weapon. Like, they've been being careful with him, as they should be, because this is literally his fourth major league outing. Like, we're not used to seeing guys. Like, Justin Slayton came here, and we just, obviously because he's a Rule 5 pick, you knew he was going to be on the roster. Otherwise, the Red Sox had to give him back to Texas. So we just kind of, like, you don't look at him like you look at a rookie. Most rookies, it's like, give them time. Justin Slayton, it's like, okay, like, there are people who are like, yeah, this guy's like the 7th, 8th inning guy right away. He looks the part. He's not that right now, and he's hopefully, like, Chris Martin and Kenley Jansen are as good as they were last year, and he never has to be that, but would you guys be surprised if Justin Slayton sooner rather than later was like the third best relief option on this team, or at least third in command? Because I think we think all these guys are better than Kenley at this point. But, and that's saying a lot because Campbell and Weissert have looked great. Like, this bullpen, man.
Kenley hasn't surrendered a run yet. Excuse you.
Yeah, okay.
Fine. He doesn't look great, but we have 4 innings, 6 Ks, no earned runs. I ain't complaining about that. Guy's got one back injury, one little back thing, and everyone's like, he sucks now. No, I'm just kidding.
He'll be fine. He'll be fine.
No, to answer your question, no, not at all. Slayton, his stuff is nasty. He's also, I think, just from watching him, looks kind of deceptive. He's got a little mini hitch in his windup right in the middle. Little like, bloop, right before he throws. You know, the bloop.
Yeah, like a, and then, like a bloop. Bloop. Like a bloop.
Bloop. Yeah, bloop. Yeah,
like that. Yeah. Okay, yeah. That's it.
And he throws his four seam. You notice that? Andrew Bailey is like, you can throw the four. Everyone else, stop. But Slayton.
But they picked up the usage a little bit on the four seams. Like, it was a little, like, Pivetta was throwing it a little more. Like, they picked it up a little bit.
Pivetta and Slayton are the two guys who do. Yeah, the overall, I'd have to refer to the numbers. But
yeah. No, but yeah. They still a lot less.
Slayton's nasty. Like you said, also Weissert. I feel super confident when he's on the mound. I love his closed stance, too. He looks just scary for a hitter.
I felt bad that he had to be the – like, and obviously their pen was super taxed and like guys had to really push it, and Weissert was getting at 30 pitches there, and that's where the run scored. And like, I feel bad that he was like the guy that had to take the brunt of it. Cause if Weissert, obviously they would tell you, everyone knows, like, you want to get that guy's like he's got crazy stuff. You don't want him throwing 30 pitches. Like, that's a guy you want to keep under 20 every single time. But
yeah, all he looks good. Great. Hey, you want to move on to the third game? Because I had a comment about the third game. But
let's go third game. Sox win 12-2. What do you got?
Yeah, home runs, a lot of them. And
good amount.
Tanner Houck is good. And that's it. Thank you for listening. Follow and subscribe. That's our show.
Very good.
Now, Tanner Houck, holy crap. He looked even better, I think. I don't think that's crazy to say. He looked even better in his second outing. The only guy on the pitching staff who took a step forward in his second outing. What do you even say?
He looked better.
Yeah.
What?
It's tough because I don't think he looked better, but I think it was more impressive because he was facing a better lineup.
I thought he looked better. He was putting guys away like crazy, and just like the pace at which he did it was just, he was a machine today. Like, that was a pleasure to watch. That's
absolutely
late baseball viewing right there. That's what you want to see if you're Major League Baseball. Nasty pitcher, good pace, entertaining, striking guys out. No notes from me. Very impressed by Houck. I think he should do the same thing in his next start.
Yeah, he kind of labored in the first inning, and it had like 23 or 24 pitches, and it was a little bit like, oh crap, because like the pen again was taxed, and it's like we kind of needed this guy to go six. Now it's like, oh god, we're hoping he even makes it five, and he was able to settle right in, struck out the side in the fourth, and this was maybe the most important part of it for me, because how many times have we talked about Houck in the third time through the order? Here's his third time through. Fly out, strike out, line out, ground out, walk, strike out. That's the third time through.
Love it. And also, you could tell towards the end of that outing, he was definitely running out of gas. He looked like he was laboring a little bit. The body language started to change, and he still powered through and finished that inning. So, yeah, man, I'm so excited about how that he looks like a real major league starter now. Knock on wood, two starts. Not great opposition, but you only can play who's on the schedule. So Tanner,
dare we say,
the man of the game.
Dare we say, Sammy?
Dare you?
Is it the PT bump?
It's the PT bump. He was thinking about you the entire time, both outings. He was thinking about, okay, Gordo, you were talking about cartoons and stuff. That relaxes me. Pitch, strike three. That's what he was going through his head. The PT bump. Also, Pat, do you have any Houck comments? Because I want to give someone else a shout out.
No, I agree with you. He, to me at least, he looked better, I would say, the second time around. He had one of those outings that truly felt like every single batter was like 3-4 pitches, next guy's up. Like, he was just cruising today. He looked sharp. And yeah, he was the only one that kind of withstood what he showed in the first outing. Not that anyone really got blown up badly, but just in terms of going deep in the game, strikeouts, pitch mix, not walking guys, he looked great today. Nice job, Tanner. Keep proving me wrong, please.
Nice job, Tanner. Nice job, Tanner. Can I give a shout out to Chase Anderson again? Again, Chase Anderson. Laugh all you want. Make fun of my guy, Chase Anderson. Saves the bullpen, gives everybody an added day. I love that. Those are the little things that solve those fucking innings pitched issues that the Red Sox had last year. So a shout out to him. I know it wasn't a high leverage thing, but the fact that he keeps everyone fresh, I think, is big. I think Cora loves that stuff. So
yeah, well, after last season, we said this last series. Like, Caleb Ort, I always forget the stupid mustache guy who came over from the Angels, and it's not Weiss.
God. Garza.
Garza. God, he.
Bar. Zah, pizza.
So many. Paraclaw. All these guys just. You wasted too many bullpen innings because those guys couldn't lock it down.
Yeah, Chase Anderson. It's so nice. It's such a luxury. Oh, you're up by six? Save the bullpen. Don't worry about it. Anderson, go pitch four innings. That's such a weapon in a long season. So
It's crazy.
I'm so happy they picked him up.
I was just going to say, it's crazy that we were like, what, 2 or 3 days before the season and he wasn't on the team? Like, what the hell was their plan for these innings if he wasn't here?
Yeah, it's nice too because you also have the luxury of being what might be your most, like your first actual challenge of the season. You now roll into that with Chris Martin and Kenley, 3-4 days rest. That whole bullpen is ready and to go.
Yeah,
the front rotation is back up with a fully rested bullpen. Going into that series, it's hard to feel better.
Yep.
Yep. You know who's super rested? Joely. No, I'm just kidding. We don't have to talk about Joely. But yeah, Pat, yeah, Weissert threw 30 pitches game two. He should be good. Slayton, I don't know how many he threw, but he pitched 2 innings, so I assume close to 30 as well. Struck out 5 guys, so yeah, he at least threw 15. Don't think he struck everyone on 3 pitches, so probably around 20, 30. Yeah, man, fresh bullpen. We didn't get much of that in 2023, so good move, Breslow. Bring in an old Chase Anderson.
Slayton threw 26 pitches.
26, okay. You know, Gordo, we might have made a huge mistake when we were in spring training, because when we were down there, Chase Anderson was making his first start on the backfields. So it was like a sim game. And Rob offered, hey, do you guys want to watch Chase Anderson? And we both said, no, thanks. We would rather watch the Red Sox face Max Fried.
And Max Fried stinks.
Yeah, Fried's a bum. And Chase Anderson.
Two saves. He's two saves.
How do you feel about his stuff plus, though?
It's good. No, another shout out, though. Another shout out. David Hamilton.
Hell yeah.
Got the call, flew across the country to LA, to Anaheim, gets a start, and makes a bad error right off the bat. I know the ball was hit 112 miles an hour. It was right at him. He needs to make the play. He would tell you that. Story makes the play. That's all we're thinking about. But then he gets the next ball, turns a double play, and then later makes a nice little sliding play, flips, gets the out at second, was very good, and hits his first home run.
Yeah, he smacked that. By the way, that error, Gordo, believe it or not, it was ruled a hit because nobody ever makes errors anymore. Major League Baseball. Yeah, man, the knock on Hamilton has always been the defense. He's not even a shortstop by trade. He's more of a second base left field kind of guy, which is exactly what we don't want at shortstop right now. But hey, other than that one play that was ruled a hit that probably should have been an error, he looked good. Good enough.
Every ball got hit his way. It was wild. Yeah. It's like, hey, Trevor Story's out. You guys have like a minor leaguer at shortstop. We're going to hit 15 fucking balls right at him and see if he can play.
Right. Yeah. The thing we talked about before we started recording, though, we do have to touch on this. I hate to be negative because he had a great game. He looks a little uncomfortable with making the throw from short to first. It's a big effort from him. It's not like Story where he just was like buttery smooth. It's more of like a...
Yeah. It's like you see some of these other shortstops, they just kind of like flick the ball and it just goes over to first base at like 90 plus miles an hour. Whereas Hamilton, it's like he is like herk back. Hah! That's what he's doing.
Yeah, that was a good sound. One more.
Hah!
Nice. You sound like kind of like karate.
That's what
anime.
Yeah, anime Gordo. But yeah, the home run was awesome because it was a tie game at the time too. So it was a big one. Nobody in the world expected to see that except for David Hamilton.
Yep. And it was great because right after that, I want to say Duran made an out, but then Devers and O'Neill then go back to back. So they had 3 homers in that inning and it set the tone for the game. Obviously, this one got way out of hand later, but early on, it was like Houck was laboring early in the first, and to come back from that and see David Hamilton and Devers and O'Neill again for his 5th homer of the season. He hasn't even played a game at Fenway yet. And he has 5 homers as a Red Sox. That's ridiculous. I don't know how we would find that stat for most home runs by a Red Sox player before playing their first home game. That's got to be a stat. He must have the record on that. 5 home runs before playing his first Fenway game.
Yeah, we'd have to get someone who has that subscription to, what is it, Stathead?
Yeah, is that Stathead. How people get? Yeah, we need that.
We can be like, we're Big J journalists. Give us a freebie. And then they'll see our content and be like, no. You guys use sounds instead of analytics. Yeah. His throwing is more rather than a whoosh. All right. Yeah, that was, I mean.
That's pretty much the game right there. Oh, yeah. One negative. Bad.
Oh.
They didn't hit Miguel Sano.
What do you mean? Oh, Duran?
Like when Miguel Sano was pitching, the Red Sox, I don't want to single out Duran because it's a team effort, but Duran.
It's just Duran, yeah. Wait, oh, we have to give a shout out to Reese McGuire. Did we even mention Reese?
Oh my God, no, yeah. We didn't. Forgot about Reese.
Someone's probably screaming into their phone. Why are you not mentioning? Sorry. Last year, Reese McGuire, one home run all season long, came in Seattle. This year, 10 games in, he has 200% as many home runs with two, which is, what the hell is going on with Reese McGuire? He's like the best hitter on the team.
And it's not like these dinky home runs. Like, he hits the ball and you know it's gone. And like,
yeah, he has a weird habit of like when he connects, you're like, oh shit, that's gone. Not like, did he just fucking hit a home run? Like, you could tell off the bat when, I think it's the swing. I think with his swing, the second you kind of see that angle, you know it's gone, which is weird because even guys like Rafi and Casas aren't like that. Like, they'll make contact with on a swing like that, and it's like a warning track flyout. But for some reason, when Reese does it, you know it's gone. It's fucking weird.
Let's speaking of Reese, we would have gotten to it anyway because we can't have a series MVP discussion without discussing Reese McGuire. Mm-hmm. Because Reese McGuire in this series was 3-for-9, 2 home runs. He drove in 7 runs. To me, this MVP discussion is a 2-man race between him and Tyler O'Neill, who was 4-for-10 with 3 home runs, drove in 3 runs. Weird fact about Tyler O'Neill, he's hit 5 home runs. They're all solos, which is weird.
Is he selfish?
Yes.
Embrace debate.
I'm gonna keep Tyler O'Neill all selfish? I'm going to keep all the muscle for myself. That's his mindset.
Wow. What a Chad.
Anyone else, you guys, like MVP discussion, anyone else deserve like at least an honorable mention, or do you want to make an argument for someone else, even if you're not necessarily going to vote for him?
No, I'm ready to give my official pick.
All right. Let's hear it, Sammy.
All right. My pick. Not really a surprise, but I'm going to go with Reese. I don't know how you couldn't. 2 bombs from the catcher position. You're there to play defense, and he's like, nah, bro, dude. I'm Reese Ichiro McGuire. 2 bombs for you. And how many RBIs did you say? I think he had 4 on Sunday.
7 RBIs in the series.
8 RBIs. God damn, Reese. That's like the entire first series against Seattle, I feel like.
Yeah, and they were important homers. Like that home run in the second or in the third game. They were up 4-0, and we were talking in our text chat. We're talking about like, oh, are they going to use the important relievers? Who knows? Are they available? And then Reese hits a 3 and home run, 7-0.
Right. But, yeah, that completely changed the complexion of the game. Would they probably have still won if he didn't hit that? Yeah, but now you get the fresh bullpen heading into the home opener, which, again, that's not a small thing.
I would normally let Pat vote second, but I don't know who he's going to go with. And I'm going to go the other way on this one. So we'll give Pat like the winner take all vote. I'm going with Tyler O'Neill. As much as I want to vote for Reese, because this is probably the best series that Reese has had as a member of the Red Sox, or maybe in his whole career. And he may never have a better one. But O'Neill hit 3 home runs. The first home run was part of that barrage in the first game. Was that the one that put the Sox up 1-0? It might have been. I forget.
I think so.
I have it in my notes. Yeah, it was. So it put the game up. It put the Sox up 1-0, which was big at the time. And then later in that game, he had a home run in the 8th that put them back ahead. So it was a go-ahead home run in the 8th of a tie game. And then in game 3, hits his 3rd home run of the series. This one put him up 3-0. You hit 3 home runs in a series. Yeah, I get it. He didn't drive in as many runs as Reese, but 3 home runs is 3 home runs. That guy basically touches the ball and it goes over the fence. So, viva Tyler O'Neill. He's jacked. He hits Jax. He's got my MVP vote. Pat, who you got? Tiebreaker.
Yeah, it sucks because I don't know how often Reese McGuire is going to be a part of the series MVP conversation, but I'm with Gordo. I have to go Tyler O'Neill.
Come on.
I know. But no, Tyler O'Neill is an absolute menace, has been all season. And I don't think there's a hotter hitter in baseball right now than Tyler O'Neill.
Did he still have the highest OPS? Yeah, it's true. It's Reese.
No. I mean, like the Mookie and Bobby Witt, probably pretty high up there.
The highest OPS in baseball right now belongs to Tyler O'Neill.
Wow, no fucking way. Really? Number one?
And by about 50 points, too. It goes Tyler O'Neill, Mookie Betts, Spencer Steer, and then a reasonable gap to the next one, who's Jose Altuve.
Cool. I'll take it.
Yeah.
We'll take it.
So congratulations to Tyler O'Neill for his first Playtesty Series MVP award. We'll start keeping track of these. So he's now tied. It's him and Duran. O'Neill and Duran each have a Series MVP award. We've been going on here, guys. Some enough said time. Anyone want to go first?
I can go.
Let's hit it, Sammy.
All right. So I don't know, Coop, if you're able to pull up this tweet, but friend of the program, Justin MLB, had a really interesting question in light of all the pitching injuries that we've seen, like Strider, Bieber, Yuri Perez, our guy Liam Hendricks, a lot of guys who are down right now. And he said, here's his tweet. He said, call me dumb for asking this. You're not dumb, Justin. It's an unfortunate question to ask, but at what point do starting pitchers in Major League Baseball start to get looked at like running backs in the NFL? Will teams be extremely hesitant to give out the big contracts to starting pitchers? This just sucks. Agree, it does suck. And I just thought that question was super interesting because a lot of these guys like Giolito's not a great example, but guys like Snell, who win the Cy Young and then can't get a really long contract. Is that going to become a more common thing with all the injury risks that we're seeing with the uptick in velocity, the new pitch clock rules? What do you guys think about that one? I think it's a really interesting question.
Yeah. Like, I get where he's going with it. And I think the notion of it isn't crazy at all, because if every single pitcher in the league is going to need Tommy John at some point, why even give them a second contract? But at the same time, the reason I think it's a little bit different is because you can get by without a good running back because of the quarterback, the receivers, the O-line. If your pitching blows, I don't care how good your offense is, your pitching will be your demise.
Yeah.
So I think there will always be guys who maybe have a really good year, like out of the blue, and those guys aren't going to get paid. But when you have the guys like the Coles, and personally, I said it all offseason, I don't think Snell's that great, but you have guys like Garrett Cole, Verlander a couple years ago, Scherzer a couple years ago. Like, you have guys who you know are bona fide workhorses. Those guys are always going to get paid. There's always going to be teams who pay those guys. And like, I get the idea, but I don't see it going to that measure of guys just not getting paid anymore. I think if you're a workhorse, you're a legit star pitcher, you will always get paid. I don't think it's going that way.
I might be on the, I don't know. I'm not fully on the opposite end of this, but I think there's a reason that you see teams, and like we've seen it with the Red Sox this year, putting a huge emphasis on the development of new young pitching, increase these guys' velocity, like get as many good, cheap, controllable pitchers as you can get, so that you're not in a position where you have to get backed into a corner and pay a pitcher who could immediately get hurt, as the Red Sox did this year and had happened to them with Giolito. I think it's noteworthy that guys like Blake Snell and Jordan Montgomery had so much trouble getting contracts. That said, Bellinger also had a tough time getting a contract, so it's hard to say that it's just because they're pitchers, but it's hard to ignore. More and more guys are having elbow injuries every single year, guys going down for the year. There is so much risk with these contracts. We've seen it. John Henry has said it. It was a long time ago, but he was talking about pitchers over 30. It's turning into pitchers in general. I don't know if it's exactly the same, because these guys recoveries are all so, it's like such a good process nowadays, and all these guys have smooth recoveries and they come back as good, if not better than ever. So it's not like a guy is one injury away from never pitching for you again if you sign a guy to a 6-7 year deal. But yeah, I would watch out in future years for teams not wanting to pay pitchers. It'll be interesting to watch.
Yeah, I think it's like the concept makes sense, but it's not to the same degree.
Does that make sense? Yes, I agree.
I said that and was then a little nervous that it didn't make sense, but I'm glad you understand. It's Danny Tanner in my head. A lot of thoughts.
No, not happening.
It's gonna happen.
Not happening, man. Not happening, man.
Danny Tanner.
Pat, you want to go last or next?
I'll go last.
Okay. Mine's a really quick one. Coop had made a video edit about my stat on the bullpen last episode, and it got posted on the Playtesty Instagram account. I then took that video to post on my story on my Instagram account, and I wrote, Sox pen is fire, and it was like the fire emoji. So Sox pen is a couple flames. And the words were like a little close together, if you can picture it. Yeah. I had to take
Sox
that one.
Penis.
Yeah, I had to take that one down. That's my no said. Sox penis fire.
Sox penis fire.
I was on my Instagram story for like 10 hours. Someone told me, it's like, haha. And I was like, oh no. So yeah.
Matt, what's the best case scenario and the worst case scenario if you have a Sox penis fire?
So Sox penis fire. First degree burn is just the top layer of skin, the epidermis. Worst prognosis would be if it is a full thickness burn or a third degree.
No.
That is when you would have ash and required debridement of your pecker.
Oh my God. You're even using the medical term pecker. Incredible. That's why you tune in for Nuff Said. You get content like that.
Yeah. Move on to the next one. Pat, change the subject.
I got a bone to pick.
Ooh.
It's not a real bone to pick. 47, the brand, has to quit making such fire shit. I'm going broke over here. I was looking at hats the other day, and I'm like, yeah, I can't do it. I was like, I can't do it. It sucks for the people listening, because if you didn't know about it, it's going to be too late. Today was 4-7 day for 47 era. 30% off. Went on over to the store, bought two new Sox hats. Hate myself for it, but goddamn. They're red hot.
You know why 47 is good? Is they're like the opposite of New Era or whoever makes the flat bill hats. They it's so simple. Their designs are all simple, clean, simple, and they fit well. Oh yeah, New Era. The New Era Major League Baseball hats are fine. I'm talking about like their design.
I get it. Just
leads the way. So great. Yeah, Pat, it's so hard to not constantly buy hats.
It's so hard.
Pat really wants this podcast to get sponsored by a headwear brand.
What is it? Branded Bills. Branded Bills is my new hat thing. That's where the Massachusetts one that I have. They fit better than any hat I've ever had.
Yeah.
If you are a headwear brand and you would like to sponsor this podcast, please reach out to Pat Brown. Pat, what's your Twitter handle?
Pat Brown 954. 47. You want in. I'm your guy. I got a hat rack of 30, 47 hats out there. I just ordered two more. Hit my line. Let's do business. Let's talk.
You know what hat I want to get? I think this one is so cool. I'll drop an image into the open image, a new tab. Sorry, guys. I'm not a tech guy. I want to get the, you guys know who Marvin Hagler is?
Yeah, boxer.
Yeah, so he's like a famous boxer. He's from Massachusetts, and he has this famous hat. This is red hat, and it just said war on it. And it's like iconic in the world of combat sports. So I was thinking of my, yeah, look at that. Sick. Or Marvin Hagler.
Sick.
So metal. But it's so hard not to constantly buy hats, and 47 having 47 day is just
brutal.
Shout out also Official League. They've got some really good stuff over there. So shouts to them. Shouts to Official League. You guys got anything else before we wrap this thing up?
No. Let's wrap this one up, and then maybe we'll do a preview after this, huh?
Yeah. If you're listening on drop day, it's not going to be there yet. But tune in tomorrow. We'll have a series preview for Sox Orioles, first division matchup of the year. If you're not listening on drop day, that means it's probably there. So go click it. Go listen to that. We love the series previews. We've got all our segments. We've got all our competitions, some crystal bomb action, some series prediction action, some guys being dudes over there. Like, we've got some good stuff for you. So go check those out. Those are really good. But for now, this has been episode 62 of Play Tessie. We appreciate you guys tuning in. But before you switch to the next episode, before you go to that series preview, remember, hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening, Apple, Spotify, Odyssey app. Rate us 5 stars. Leave a comment. Tell us what you think of our Nuffs. Tell me what you think of my Instagram post. And tell us what you think of the Sox so far, 7-3. YouTube, hit that thumbs up. Subscribe to WEI. We've got a playlist there. We are the Play Tessie playlist on the WEI channel. So hit that thumbs up on the video and leave those same comments there. We're on the socials at Play Tessie on both Instagram and Twitter. But Sox 7-3, things are looking good. Obviously, confusing vibes. I thought we had an appropriately toned podcast with the good and the bad because there was a lot of both. But till next time, we'll get back to you with the series preview, and we'll get back to you after the Orioles series. But for now, for Sammy, for Pat, for Coop producing, it's Gordo here. For Play Tessie, thanks for tuning in. Toodaloo.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Odyssey is giving you a chance to win a trip to London to see Taylor Swift at the Eras Tour. It's Tay in the UK.
Hey, it's Taylor.
Just download the free Odyssey app, log in and listen to a participating station for a minimum of 60 minutes to get your daily entry. And you could win a chance to fly off to London with 3 friends and see Taylor.
I can't wait to see you at the Eras Tour in London.
For more, go to odyssey.com/Taylor.
Tay in the UK.
It's on the Odyssey app. Thanks to Republic Records.
This is a national contest.